Hello, listeners, and thanks for joining us on this special Monday. Today, we are taking a pause from our normal category, and we are doing the movie The Rage, Carrie 2 from 1999. And we are doing this today because we have had our first listener request from Nicole L. And Nicole has asked us to do, well, she suggested several movies, but this is the one that we chose. And she chose this one because she loves a good scary movie. So we are doing this today in honor of Nicole L. Thanks for emailing us, Nicole. And I am Kristen, and with me as always is
Justin,
Sarah,
and Ashley.
All right, so The Rage, Carrie 2, 1999. Where were you?
I was 4 years old. Probably entering preschool.
Okay.
And I was a junior / senior in high school, depending on when this came out.
This came out in March, late March of 99.
So technically I was a junior. Yeah.
So now this, I remember seeing this video store rental. But this movie was kind of squashed down at the box offices and everything else because this came out. I mean, I don't know. I read something along the lines of this came out in late March, and then the Columbine school shooting happened April 20th.
Yeah.
Ooh.
But I just don't think that would have anything to do. I mean, the movie had a month already at the theater. Like, people were going to see it or they weren't. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, but, like, revenge is a theme regardless of the setting. So, I don't know.
Yeah. But I do want to, I'm saying all of this because I don't know the validity of all of that, but I just wanted to point out how the closely related or closely in time these things were, where this film came out in March, Columbine happened in April, but then by July, American Pie is out. And, like, skyrockets. The difference in where we were and how quickly we get over things, and happy teen movies with sex, a plus, but this shit got real.
Yeah.
It got real dark.
Yeah, it did.
VHS tape. I watched this several times. I enjoyed this movie as a teenager. And it actually, this movie made me watch the original Carrie.
Oh, yeah. I have not seen the original Carrie.
I know that I've seen this movie, but I hadn't really remembered much about it. So this was kind of like watching it again for the first time.
I don't remember the last time I've seen it.
I had seen Carrie, but I hadn't seen this one.
Carrie was from 1976. That one's a little out there. But Carrie by Stephen King. I mean, the thing is that everyone's heard of Carrie by now.
Yeah.
You know, Carrie, the idea is kind of ubiquitous. Even if you have not seen it, you know what it is.
Well, I mean, then they also did remake it.
Yeah, with Julianne Moore played the mom, and yeah. Chloe, was it Chloe Moretz?
Oh, Chloe, I can't remember Grace, her last name.
Yeah.
Oh, something like Chloe that. Chloe Grace Moretz. Yeah, so she played the role of Carrie.
I think that's who it was.
So maybe that one might pop up in the future. But when Nicole emailed in and she had this list of movies, some of them were like, yeah, we're going to do those. We have that planned. But I looked at this one, and immediately I was like, oh, my God, I remember watching this. And so I'm like, I vote for this one. And we all looked at the list, and we all kind of voted, and Rage Carrie 2 won out.
Yeah, but we're excited for some of the others that are on the list.
Yeah.
Well. Yeah. And they are coming.
They are. So thanks for this one, Nicole. Hopefully we talk about it, and you enjoy hearing what we have to say. Maybe we hold some of the same opinions. when we look at the film, people's faces, their names stand out. Did anybody stand out in this movie?
Shitbreak.
Yes.
Shitbreak. Yeah. Eddie K. Thomas in like a small role as Arnie.
Yeah, he was really the only one that I really recognized.
I recognize people, but I don't know their names.
Ooh, and okay. Sissy what is it?
Spacek? Sissy Spacek?
Yes. I got it right.
Hi. Yeah, she popped up in the flashbacks. We've got, Mina Savari was in this movie.
For very brief.
For a very brief moment. Yeah.
I don't think I recognized anybody else.
Mina Savari plays the character who dies by suicide.
Yeah, wasn't ready for that. It hit kind of fast, and that was really, really sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, it totally. I remembered it. We're not into talking about the moment yet. But Mina Savari, American Pie, American Beauty, American Horror Story as Black Dahlia. There's also, if anybody watched Home Improvement.
Oh my gosh.
Zachary Ty Bryan, who was the Eric the Asshole, who actually slept with Lisa in this movie. He was one of the sons in that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's ringing a bell.
If anybody watches Shameless.
Nope.
The girl who played Rachel is the other daughter on Shameless, Sammy, the one, like the estranged daughter who's there for like a season. So I don't know if anybody watches that show. No. And of course, like Jason London stands out to me, who plays Jesse.
Mm-hmm.
So he got famous doing Aerosmith music videos for Crazy and Amazing. And then he did Dazed and Confused, which is actually coming up this month.
Right.
Spoilers. Tu Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar.
Which is in the future.
It's in the future somewhere. And then he did one called The Man in the Moon with Reese Witherspoon about two sisters who fall in love with the same farm boy.
Oh,
boy.
So Jason London has been making people swoon for a very long time. And in those kinds of films. Dazed and Confused. I cannot wait until we talk about that movie. But as far as big names, I mean, Amy Irving comes back, who was Sue Snell in the original Carrie. And then the girl who plays Monica in this movie, the girl with the glasses, her name's Rachel Blanchard. She's actually in a lot of stuff, TV shows like Seventh Heaven. She was Cher Horowitz when they
did yes.
Yeah, when they did Cher on TV, when they did a Clueless on TV.
Yeah. Cuz she looks so similar to
Alicia Silverstone. Yeah. She was also in the TV show Are You Afraid of the Dark for several mm-hmm. She was part of the Midnight Society. And she did like Snakes on a Plane and Road Trip, a movie called Sugar and Spice. About cheerleaders Rob Banks. Amina Samari's also in that, I think.
She has been around,
and she's been very successful on TV as well.
So yeah, I recognize a lot of people. I just didn't know their names. But
now, written by the same guy, Raphael Moreau, who wrote a movie called Hackers.
Nope.
Anybody heard of Hackers?
Nope. Who was in that?
Angelina Jolie.
I've heard of it. I don't recall.
It was in her very first. It was very, very high tech. Of course, it's called Hackers, so it was like when computers could do everything.
I think I remember seeing it.
I recommend it.
I remember seeing that preview as a kid, but I don't think I ever saw the movie.
So, I mean, pretty strong. I mean, and then the director, Kat Shea, she directed a little film called Poison Ivy with Drew Barrymore and Sarah Gilbert.
Different from like the Batman movies?
No. like it's about like a family who like a girl who becomes friends with this girl, and she like begins to seduce like everyone in the family because she's poison.
Oh my.
Drew Barrymore plays like this Lolita type figure who like captivates an entire family and like tries to, I think, steal them from the daughter or something.
I don't think I've seen that because I think you may have remembered that.
Well, Poison Ivy 2 stars Alyssa Milano.
Oh my.
Yeah.
I'll watch that.
Yes. So Poison Ivy movies, I recommend. All right, but we're talking about The Rage, Carrie 2. And before we can do that, we've got to talk about triggers. And, oh, my God, triggers. I mean, yeah, triggers, right? Fucking triggers?
Fucking triggers. As you can imagine, there are some. There are a lot of fucking triggers.
All right, go.
Actually, I had something I wanted to bring to the table. Like, last episode, Sarah kind of shared that there was, like, she had kind of her own, like, big trigger that, like, kind of took her out of the movie a bit. I didn't know if you guys experienced any of that before I read these. I was wondering if you'd be interested in, like, sharing that.
Yeah.
Okay.
When Walt got hit by the car, I lost my shit.
Oh, my God.
We knew you would, Sarah.
I lost my... I cried. I lost my shit.
I got nauseous and I started looking at pictures of my dog on my phone because he's not at home today.
Oh my God, Ashley, you did the same thing that I did. Like,
that's
the friend's dog that I'm watching. I gave her an extra big hug. I'm like, oh my God, this can't happen. Walt has to live.
And he does.
Spoiler.
If he would have died, I would have told you I wasn't watching the rest of the movie.
Oh my God.
And it really came out of nowhere. It was just kind of like not expecting it in this movie.
I like had a panic attack because I was like, no, he's running in the road. No.
I'm like, Walt has gotten her through so much. Walt has to be okay.
I thought he was dead.
They certainly made the running over look a lot worse than then she's like carrying around an alert dog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I mean, he like was under like every single tire.
Yeah.
When they showed
and he's like just conscious and just like not making a noise. Cause they knew it was a lot. They knew it was a lot. Like, I mean, he should have died. Like, I'm not saying he should have died, wanted him to die. I'm saying physically, technically.
From what they showed. That dog would have been dead.
Dead.
And I would have been done.
Well, like, let me reassure you that the actor dog was 100% okay.
And 100% adorable.
Yes.
100% adorable. Yes. They had.
Like, I would never actually want to cuddle with that kind of dog. But like just looking at it, it looks like it'd be a nice, friendly dog.
You have audacity. He's cute.
You would not be able to not touch the ears.
I know.
They're so long and like floppy and
The ears are so floppy. They'd always get wet when he would go like to take a drink or something.
When he was plopping off of that, when they should put him out the window, he plopped down. That was fun and cute.
Like, plop, plop. Here's some trivia about hound dogs like that. So whenever they start to sniff and they get on a trail, their ears kind of drag the ground and it like knocks out their peripheral vision, but they get a wrinkle on their forehead that goes from ear to ear and it like puts a shadow over their like the top of their vision. So they're just like focusing on the ground. They have like no distraction. And that's why when they get on a scent, it's so hard to get them off. It's one of the reasons.
Because they've like
they literally can't see anything else.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Justin and Kristen, did anything really get you take you out of the movie?
See, the thing is like there are some things like triggers that we've talked about in the past that may trigger me, but I don't think that I react in like such a way that I would say that I had like a reaction to it. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
The I guess it's kind of linked with my nostalgia for the movie. I think that the whole idea of what Carrie represents and then what Rachel represents in this movie, the outcast, someone who, like, you know, like, you don't know when you're in that moment that everything's going to be okay, that, like, you're going to grow up to do great things and have your own life and be awesome in your own way. You think that, like, you're shit. And you think that, you know, that, like, everything around you is kind of shitty and you, like, kind of get made fun of all of the time and you don't fit in with the popular kids in just the right way. And everything is, you're always on the lookout for what's some kind of cruel joke or what's some kind of, like, thing that you're not understanding that they might be making fun of you about type thing. And I think that is, I wouldn't say a trigger for me, but it's an immediate empathy because like I've been there before. Like I've just walking down a hall of a high school or a junior high and like people shouting things at you or like making fun of you in a classroom, you know, for a plethora of reasons. Or just always feeling like you're not at that cool kid's party, but like you still have your own thing going. Like that, like I loved this movie and movies like this because you see the outcast kind of empowered. And that was always attractive to me, feeling like an outcast and wanting power.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like most people do at that age feel like an outcast. Like no matter who you are, there's still something that makes you feel like you're not fitting in with everyone else.
Yeah. Whether it's like in this case, you know, I don't know what it was supposed to be that made Rachel such an outcast. I mean, she didn't, I don't know that she was strange. I mean, I really don't understand. I mean, she's not outcast for her looks. She's not like a crazy violent person. It's just like she is a foster kid who lives in an, I guess, lower economic status.
They don't make a show of it, but her clothes are not as like flashy as the other kids' clothes.
Yeah.
She wears black and she like Marilyn Manson.
Yeah. She's not like Barbie conventional looking as like everyone else in the movie. Right. Is.
But yeah, but she was the weird kid. But just like Lisa was a weird kid and Arnie's a weird kid who can't get to the party. I like this whole thing is trigger because I was a weird kid, you know, who wrote for the school newspaper and did the theater and choir and was part of all of the clubs, you know, kind of thing. I guess that doesn't make you like I was a weird outcast. I was like, yeah.
Me too. Me too.
I mean, yeah.
I was too. Well, here we are, our little group of
weirdos. Here we are. You'll find your tribe eventually. You'll find the people. I think besides Walter getting hit by a car, it was just the way that people would not stand up for the girls at the school and like for the girl who died by suicide.
Right.
It was like the officer was like, I don't know if we're going to get anything on, like if we're going to be able to press charges. And then his dad was like the assailant's dad was like trying to protect him. And I'm just like, this is really fucked up. It's really real.
Oh, right.
Really upsetting.
When they had the, I think I wrote down the quote about like tarnish the boy's reputation. Mm-hmm. And I immediately thought to that, I don't want to fucking say the dude's name. The guy who found the unconscious girl in the alley and like fingered her. And then they're like, oh, well, we can't ruin his entire life for 2 minutes of a bad decision. And it's like, he's in college. And like you see that all of the time. And everything about the point system, the dudes in this movie, the straight male macho, all of that is super fucking triggering and wouldn't fly at all in 2021.
Right. Well, I mean... Yeah. We just had a Supreme Court justice elect or like appointed like that. So maybe it does still fly. I don't know. We try to not let it slide.
That gets into so many intricacies of like a rigged system where a minority opinion is like controlling the majority of a country.
Yeah.
I think I'm thinking about like the majority of people's essences and souls and their morality of what like.
Like that it wouldn't fly because like of that, it wouldn't fly. People are like, oh no, we can't do that anymore.
Like I still think that like guys today are obsessed with getting laid, but I really don't. I really think that we're not giving enough credit to like young men today who I don't think that they're gonna rate these people on point systems. I totally believe that from dudes in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't. I don't know that that is something that. Like, I'm not saying you're not going to get rid of assault, you're not going to get rid of assholes, but I think that there's been a general shifting, and like we've been hitting hardcore trying to talk about gender equality and like the way that men and women should interact together, and just mm-hmm. seeing this whole point system, it really archaic, right?
Or yeah,
I'm
yeah.
totally a dumb fucking male.
I don't know, even like when Sarah and I were in high school X many years ago, because it was like, I don't know, almost 10 years ago now.
Oh, God.
It was less than that. Anyway, I don't think I was aware of any sort of point system thing. Were you?
I don't know.
Or like even like rankings, or I feel like this is such a Hollywood thing, because most goddamn like teen males in high school are like lucky if they like get one girlfriend who's interested, then let alone like trying to rack up all of these fucking, like, this is not gonna fly. Like I don't, in real life, girls are not gonna take that.
Well, yeah,
no,
I mean, I guess it would have to be like an insanely large school for the girls not to be taught.
Yeah.
Because these girls are all going to be, like, talking about what they've done with their friends. And it's, I mean, all of this stuff in high school spreads like wildfire.
But I guess this is a giant school, though. I mean, yeah. I graduated with a class of, like, almost 400 people.
75.
Then, yeah, 75 for you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I still feel like in a school, a large school, even if, like, this school your size, kids would still talk.
Yeah,
I mean,
you would. A hoe, and who's an asshole, and who's a player and a user,
and like social media stuff gets social around.
But if somebody's hot enough, somebody doesn't care. Or that's the thing, is you always think you're the one who's different, and that's what they tell you. Like, here's my reputation, but you're so cute, you might make me want. Sure, I'll meet your parents, sleep together. I don't know you on Monday.
Well, that's the thing, is there may not be a point system, but there are people who do that. There are women and men who do that.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate.
But just not like, I don't know that there would be a herd of teen boys who, I don't know. I just feel like that was very Hollywoodized.
Yeah, this may be like a college boy type of thing back then. But
like a
hopefully
frat house?
Not.
Yeah.
But high school makes it a little bit.
Because like, I don't believe it.
Yeah, like
they're lucky to touch a boob,
right?
You
like they have this sexual prowess to be
exactly
bagging all of these ladies, and they're telling us through the whole movie that these guys are not smooth.
No,
they're not. Like,
they play football.
Yeah, but they don't have. They don't seem to have any kind of like romantic bones in their bodies. I mean, they're shown just being completely
pigs, morons.
So I don't know. That doesn't seem like the type of guy who would be like romancing a bunch of ladies.
No,
I don't know. It is like almost like an unknown like world, because it's such a mix of reality and fiction, and it kind of paints everybody in a bad light, because we just described like this a guy, and then like there's the girls who go for that guy,
right? Yeah.
And like you have like the Tracy characters in this movie. Like Tracy is just sleeping with like this dude, and then she sleeps with Jesse. I don't know. We're getting into talking about a lot of the movie by intricately talking about the triggers.
Yeah.
So I'll go ahead and read through the list. We've got mental illness, losing a parent, foster care, high school, point systems, Marilyn Manson, objectification, suicide, feeling used, toxic masculinity, statutory rape and rape, the justice system failing sexual assault victims and survivors, PTSD, underage drinking, dog getting hit by a car, loss of a friend, being abused by a coach, homophobic language, being harassed at home. Let me see. I don't know if I already said sexual assault, but I think yes. I listed it twice. Parental abuse, slut shaming, public humiliation, gore, eye injuries, murder, loss of a fist, and drowning.
Help me out. Where was the actual rape?
Just the implied, like, I'm trying to think.
Like, I think maybe rape by coercion would be.
Statutory rape.
Because they're coercing all of these girls. Totally.
So, yeah.
In that sense. Like, I mean, it's consensual, but it's like, it's got.
Coercion does not equal consent.
Okay.
And there were a couple of others that I noticed too. We had bullying, which you kind of like spoke about in a roundabout way and some other things, but also weapon violence. And I say that because there were kind of odd weapons like harpoon guns.
Yeah, harpoon gun.
And recording without consent.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. There's some fucked up people in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are.
I think they did it on purpose so that by the very end of it, we were all okay with what Rachel was going to do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they needed to do that.
This is how things would be in my pro-women society.
I knew that you were going to. We'll get into some stuff. Okay, so we're getting ready to go for the plot by plot. This movie was made for $21 million and only brought in $17 million. So that's maybe why they say that the box office was kind of hit by school violence, but I don't know. But it was kind of a box office flop. Let's talk about it. We'll see what we think.
In 1986, as a child, Rachel is placed in foster care when her mother, Barbara, is diagnosed with schizophrenia after mistaking signs of Rachel's telekinesis as possession by Satan. 13 years later, in September 1999, Rachel is an outcast and is living with an unsympathetic foster parent and attending high school. After her best friend, Lisa, dies by suicide by leaping from the roof of the school, it is uncovered that Eric, a popular football star, had rejected her after exploiting her for sex. What do you mean?
Like, you get no information about Lisa whatsoever, and then she just kills herself, what we're only told, over a boy.
Yeah, it's like we don't see anything about her, and it's kind of like rushed, and there's no like explaining things that happen. Is that, I mean, that
you don't know any of her mental state about anything else. We're told that she gives her away her virginity, and then he tells her she's nothing, and then she is upset by that so much that she takes her own life.
Mm-hmm. I guess maybe it's kind of. I don't know. I take it in the direction of, like, you never really know what someone's going through. And, like, we truly did not know what she was going through. We knew that she had a happy moment and then she got terrible news. And that was how she coped. And you don't know. Like, that's the thing. You don't always know what people are going through or what they're thinking.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know that. I don't know. I'm not trying to offend anyone or anything, but I'm not sure that anyone is like, this event happens, now I commit suicide.
Like, immediately after?
Like, they've thought about it. There's something has happened before. They do have some sort of, like, the conversation on the bus could have been about, like, any kind of manic episodes that Lisa might have been having. I don't remember if they're like, you are unusually happy today. Or, like, any drops of home life, or that they met going through counseling or something. I mean, so, like, legit, then, like, we're having the representation that girl gives away virginity, shamed so much for it, she kills herself. Like, mm-hmm. that's what society, like that's what she felt. Like, she, like, what would be the reason why she committed suicide? Because she felt what?
Embarrassed.
Yeah, like used, embarrassed.
Used, yeah. embarrassed. And where does that come from? Like, societal shame?
Mm-hmm. Well, and he told her she was nothing. And so, I mean, she was having a really low moment and probably believed him because he was very important to her in that last 24 hours or however long he had been, like, grooming her.
I mean, like, and even just the betrayal of it, like, when you think somebody is your friend and they do something like that to you, even in, like, the at the party when they, you know, tricked her and everything to make her believe that she was going to be this, you know, part of their group, you know, how did she feel about being betrayed? I mean, some people react super differently to stuff, but...
I know. It just made me have a feeling of, like, this is a film in 1999, and, like, a 2021 representation. I mean, I guess there are all types of suicide. This just mm-hmm. seemed very abrasive and impactful and cookie cutter.
And here's the other thing that, like, just came to my mind. There are a lot of unsuccessful suicide attempts for reasons just like this.
True, yes.
Because people are just so distraught. They are at a very low point. They don't know what else to do. They think, like we were talking about earlier, they don't know that things can get better. They don't know that this is going to be at the back of everybody's mind in the next, like, 6 months. And so they attempt suicide, and a lot of people today are walking around with, you know, suicide attempts that were unsuccessful, yeah. Because of things like this.
That's why they deliberately, like, they have Lisa walking a very long distance to do this, and then she walks like off the roof, doesn't stop, doesn't look, doesn't anything.
Yeah.
There's no hesitation, no thought about it, like, whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they could have added something in before about how she has attempted suicide.
Mm-hmm.
To make it more natural, believable, like, and yeah. natural, and something that we're not just misrepresenting, like, that you do something bad, and then, like, but, like, I guess anyone can commit suicide, or anybody can die by suicide at any time. Like, anybody can be depressed at any time, but then there are people who overuse the word depression, or we show it wrong in, like, films and TV.
Mm-hmm.
I just felt a little off about this suicide use to be about, and I thought it is so complicated with it about what would have caused this teen girl to commit suicide seemingly out of nowhere, to have the only reason be about virginity and a boy using you.
I can see the point, yeah, that it's not like, yeah. Like, it doesn't do her any justice at all.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be, like, I think they're just, like, using her to get us even more on the side of Rachel, like, have even more sympathy for Rachel, because we were taken just as by surprise as she was.
Yeah. Like, get the wonderful representation of foster care.
Yeah. Yeah.
That $300 extra.
Oh my gosh. Yeah,
like,
that.
How is there extra dollars? Spend it on the kid. Like, that's.
Yeah. That's no, what that's supposed to do.
That's not what they do. They spend it on themselves.
But I was really happy to see, though, that she got to keep Walter with her.
yeah.
I was like, what's going to happen to that cute little puppy when she gets taken off to the foster home? And, like, I don't know. I think that kind of hit home for me, too, because, like, I've seen, like, situations unfold kind of like that. It's like the unwell, hyper-religious person comes in, clearly, like, not able to take care of anybody, and, like, they have to leave their kids. And it's really sad.
Mm-hmm.
that, but like I never got to see from the point of view of like the kid surviving that.
Well, and they seem to establish that she had a pretty healthy connection. Like the foster mom was talking about the mom getting better. She references later about having to go, like going to go visit her. So it's like basically she's not adjusted. I mean, when I'm watching it this time, I'm thinking like she brings Walter inside and then she's lying. She's lying about Walter being inside. And it's like, well, are you lying because, like, these people are assholes, like, no matter what? So, like, why would you care about their rules and what they're saying? Like, Walter's the one thing that is good for you.
Yeah, I mean, like, that was – I immediately felt that way. Like, it didn't really matter to me that she was, like, lying about the dog.
Right.
Well, like, what did it hurt that they allow the dog inside during the day, but she can't sleep with the dog at night? Right. That's stupid.
Well, and then I can't sleep without Otis now. Like, once you get attached, it's hard to not.
Yeah, it feels weird when you don't have you know, your normal situation.
And comfort. It is comfort.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was really awesome that the dog got to travel and become that emotional support. We have the Lisa situation, and then we're immediately presented with like assholes. You've got the dude recording who's like, whose car is this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the same guy who was like recording people's like butts and boobs.
Oh yeah. She quotes, she says, could you please refrain from shooting my ass?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, several girls say that throughout the movie.
And they just they keep showing that it doesn't matter because that was the mentality. That's why it's been so hard to fix all of this toxic masculinity, because it was just like okayed everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're shown constantly that, dude, look, you can behave like this and you'll still get to bag the girl.
Right.
Because like it doesn't, because they're like, oh, you're just so dumb, I'll change you. And it's, yeah, assholes everywhere. But then we get Eric and Mark talking about the situation. And these are people who, quote, said that, like, love is 15 seconds of squishing noises.
Oh, my God. That was a no thank you and situation. And they
described Lisa as just a pump, a nut.
Yes, I wrote that down, too, because that was, like, so disgusting.
And it's like, that's fine if you, like, say if that.
You say up front, yeah. But they're obviously tricking these girls.
Exactly. They're saying anything. And I think that I hope to God that that's what we've done a better job of teaching a society, is like for girls to be like, do not believe bullshit.
Yeah. But willing to like, to communicate up front.
And it's boys, it is girls. Both of them need to not seek validation elsewhere and just do anything before they're ready. But you're exactly right about being upfront and communicating when you are with a sexual partner about what it is that you're doing.
Like, establish boundaries before you get into that situation, if possible. Like, ideally, that's what happens.
So many people just think, I'm going to have sex with you, and then that's love. You know, I think this is summer of sex. I think we've talked about this in another episode, but like that's where Lisa was. Like she gave herself, she gave her virginity, and then she was like, okay, now we're going to be together forever.
No.
And it's like heartbreaking. And it's like, what do you do with that? Like she should have been told better, like given more opportunities. But then like, is that realistic though? I mean, you're talking about giving something that is not can't ever be given again.
The thing is, this guy probably said, I love you, I want to be with you.
And then like, how long do they even like, yeah, that's just like, I just hope to God that any teenage girl today, if you like just start talking to a dude and he starts promising the world to you in like 28 to 48 hours, like that's a red flag.
Yeah, you realize that that's not
I hope that's where we have we're going as a society. Girls and guys, though. I mean, I don't know anybody. But that conversation that they had, and then it all boils down to he's got to get the photo. The photo is what incriminates him.
Well, and they're also talking about the score. And, like, remember, he changes the score in the scorebook.
Because she died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh. Which was horrible.
Yeah. And then they're, like, passing around the scorebook while the principal's making the announcement and, like, trying to erase her name and things like that. And, like, I don't know. It just was, like, it was heartbreaking. It was, like, you know, she was so, so happy that morning. She thought that she had someone that cared for her, and she was just being used for a like a stupid boys game. Like,
now all right, we're a Snowflake podcast and I gotta learn things too, so let me know. And I'm gonna tell you how I'm feeling. Okay. I'm not sure if the movie, I don't want to say represent, like, isn't this a horrible portrayal or use of suicide? And you're right. And all of this talking that I'm doing, and Ashley, you said it before. You just said it, is that you never know. It can come at any time from anyone. You don't know how anyone's dealing with anything at any time. And everyone has their own way of dealing with something.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to understand something that I think people have been trying to understand for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes we never will. And that's one of the sucky things about it. I just think
that knowing all of that, there are certain, like, this is a certain, like cheese fluff kind of movie that just used it kind of irresponsibly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
At the photo lab where she works, a devastated Rachel finds a photo of Lisa and Eric together while developing rolls of Lisa's film. Rachel turns the photograph into the police and explains that Lisa had confessed to her that she had recently lost her virginity. Sheriff Kelton, along with the school's guidance counselor, Sue Snell, pursues statutory rape charges against Eric, who is 18. It is uncovered that Eric and his football player peers, including Mark and Chuck, are competing to see who would seduce the most girls by the end of the year.
Oh my God. So the impact of Lisa hitting that car, that's the first thing I want to talk about, because I remembered it happened, but I did not remember it happened like that. And that was intense.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
They were like, they showed it more than I think I've seen it shown in other movies. Like, they kind of really gave you a good view of it.
Well, it was real too, with the people around and...
Yeah, everybody crowding around and like looking.
Just like the disbelief of, did I just see that happen? Like,
yeah,
is this really happening?
Mina Savari plays the character who dies by suicide.
Yeah, wasn't ready for that. It hit kind of fast, and that was really, really sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, it totally. I remembered it. You know, we're not into talking about the moment yet. But yeah, Mina Savari, American Pie, American Beauty, American Horror Story as Black Dahlia. There's also, if anybody watched Home Improvement.
Oh my gosh.
Zachary Ty Bryan, who was the Eric the Asshole, who actually slept with Lisa in this movie. He was one of the sons in that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's ringing a bell.
If anybody watches Shameless.
Nope.
The girl who played Rachel is the other daughter on Shameless, Sammy. The one, like the estranged daughter who's there for like a season. So I don't know if anybody watches that show. And of course, like Jason London stands out to me, who plays Jesse.
Mm-hmm.
So he got famous doing Aerosmith music videos for Crazy and Amazing. And then he did Dazed and Confused, which is actually coming up this month.
Right.
Spoilers. Tu Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar.
Which is in the future.
It's in the future somewhere. And then he did one called The Man in the Moon with Reese Witherspoon, about two sisters who fall in love with the same farm boy.
Oh, boy.
So Jason London has been making people swoon for a very long time. And in those kinds of films. Dazed and Confused. I cannot wait until we talk about that movie. But yeah, as far as big names, I mean, Amy Irving comes back, who was Sue Snell in the original Carrie. And then the girl who plays Monica in this movie, the girl with the glasses, her name's Rachel Blanchard. She's actually in a lot of stuff. TV shows like Seventh Heaven. She was Cher Horowitz when they
did yes.
Yeah, when they did Cher on TV, when they did a Clueless on TV.
Yeah, because she looks so similar to
Alicia Silverstone. Yeah. She was also in the TV show Are You Afraid of the Dark for several mm-hmm. She was part yeah. of the Midnight Society. And she did like Snakes on a Plane and Road Trip, a movie called Sugar and Spice about cheerleaders Rob Banks. Amina Savari's also in that, I think. So I mean, she has Banks. Been around and she's been very successful on TV as well.
So yeah, I recognize a lot of people. I just didn't know their names, but.
Now, written by the same guy, Raphael Moreau, who wrote a movie called Hackers.
Nope.
Anybody heard of Hackers?
Nope.
Who was in that?
Angelina Jolie.
I've heard of it. I don't recall.
It was in one of her very first. It was very, very high tech. Of course, it's called Hackers, so it was like when computers could do everything.
I think I remember seeing it.
I recommend it.
I remember seeing that preview as a kid, but I don't think I ever saw the movie.
So, I mean, pretty strong. I mean, and then the director, Kat Shea, she directed a little film called Poison Ivy with Drew Barrymore and Sarah Gilbert.
Hmm.
You guys ever heard of that?
Different from, like, the Batman movies?
No. Like, it's about, like, a family who, like, a girl who becomes friends with this girl, and she, like, begins to seduce, like, everyone in the family because she's poison.
Oh, my.
Drew Barrymore plays, like, this Lolita-type figure who, like, captivates an entire family and, like, tries to, I think, steal them from the daughter or something.
I don't think I've seen that because I think you may have remembered that.
Well, Poison Ivy 2 stars Alyssa Milano.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
I'll watch that.
Yes. So, Poison Ivy movies, I recommend. All right, but we're talking about The Rage Carry 2. And before we can do that, we've got to talk about triggers and, oh, my God, triggers. I mean, yeah, triggers, right? Fucking triggers?
Fucking triggers. As you can imagine, there are a lot of fucking triggers.
All right, go.
Actually, I had something I wanted to bring to the table. Like last episode, Sarah kind of shared that there was like she had kind of her own like big trigger that like kind of took her out of the movie a bit. I didn't know if you guys experienced any of that before I read these. I was wondering if you'd be interested in like sharing that.
Yeah.
Okay.
When Walt got hit by the car, I lost my shit.
Oh my God.
We knew you would, yeah. Sarah.
I cried. I lost my shit.
I got nauseous and I started looking at pictures of my dog on my phone because he's not at home today.
Oh my God, Ashley, you did the same thing that I did. Like,
yeah, and that's
the friend's dog that I'm watching, I gave her an extra big hug. I'm like, oh my God, this can't happen. Walt has to live.
And he does.
Spoiler. Yeah.
If he would have died, I would have told you I wasn't watching the rest of the movie.
Oh my God.
And it really I believe came that. Out of nowhere. It was just kind of like not expecting it in this movie.
I like had a panic attack. Because I was like, no, he's running in the road. No.
I'm like, Walt has gotten her through so much. Walt has to be okay.
I thought he was dead.
they certainly made the running over look a lot worse than then she's like carrying around an alert dog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause, I mean, he like was under like every single tire.
Yeah.
When they showed
and then he's like just conscious and just like not making a noise because they knew it was a lot. They knew it was a lot. Like, I mean, he should have died. Like, I'm not saying he should have died, wanted him to die. I'm saying physically, technically.
From what they showed. That dog would have been dead.
And I would have been done.
Well, like, let me reassure you that the actor dog was 100% okay.
And 100% adorable.
Yes.
100% adorable. Yes. They had.
Like, I would never actually want to cuddle with that kind of dog, but like just looking at it, it looks like it'd be. Like, it looks like it'd be a nice, friendly dog.
You have audacity. He's cute.
You would not be able to not touch the ears.
I know.
They're so long and, like, floppy and, yeah.
The ears are so floppy. They'd always get wet when he would go, like, to take a drink or something.
When he was plopping off of that, when they should put him out the window, he plopped down. And that was funny and cute.
Here's some trivia about hound dogs like that. Whenever they start to sniff and they get on a trail, their ears kind of drag the ground and it like knocks out their peripheral vision, but they get a wrinkle on their forehead that goes from ear to ear and it like puts a shadow over their like the top of their vision, so they're just like focusing on the ground. They have like no distraction. And that's why when they get on a scent, it's so hard to get them off. It's one of the reasons.
Because
they literally can't see anything else.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Justin and Kristen, did anything really get you, take you out of the movie?
See, the thing is, like, there are some things, like, triggers that we've talked about in the past that may, trigger me. But I don't think that I react in like such a way that I would say that I had like a reaction to it. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's kind of linked with my nostalgia for the movie. I think that the whole idea of what Carrie represents and then what Rachel represents in this movie, the outcast, someone who, like, you know, like, you don't know when you're in that moment that everything's going to be okay, that, like, you're going to grow up to do great things and have your own life and be awesome in your own way. You think that, like, you're shit. And you think that, you know, that, like, everything around you is kind of shitty and you, like, kind of get made fun of all of the time and you don't fit in with the popular kids in just the right way. And everything is, you're always on the lookout for what's some kind of cruel joke or what's some kind of like thing that you're not understanding that they might be making fun of you about type thing. And I think that is, I wouldn't say a trigger for me, but it's an immediate empathy because like I've been there before. Like I've like just walking down a hall of a high school or a junior high and like people shouting things at you. Or like making fun of you in a classroom, you know, for a plethora of reasons, or just always feeling like you're not at that cool kid's party, but like you still have your own thing going. Like that, I loved this movie and movies like this because you see the outcast kind of empowered. And that was always attractive to me, feeling like an outcast and wanting power.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I feel like most people do at that age feel like an outcast. Like no matter who you are, there's still something that makes you feel like you're not fitting in with everyone else.
Yeah. Whether it's like in this case, you know, I don't know what it was supposed to be that made Rachel such an outcast. I mean, she didn't. I don't know that she was strange. I mean, I really don't understand. I mean, she's not outcast for her looks. She's not like a crazy violent person. It's just like she is a foster kid who lives in an, I guess, lower economic status.
They don't make a show of it, but her clothes are not as like flashy as the other kids' clothes.
Yeah.
She, like, wears black, and she like Marilyn Manson.
Yeah, she's not like Barbie conventional looking as like everyone else in the movie. Right. Is.
But yeah, but she was the weird kid. But just like Lisa was a weird kid, and Arnie's a weird kid who can't get to the party. I like this whole thing is trigger because I was a weird kid, you know, who wrote for the school newspaper and did the theater and choir and was part of all of the clubs, you know, kind of thing. I guess that doesn't make you like I was a weird outcast. I was like, yeah.
Me too. Me too.
I mean, yeah.
I was too. Well, here we are, our little group of
weirdos. Here we are. You people, you'll find your tribe eventually. You'll find the people. I think besides Walter getting hit by a car, it was just the way that people would not stand up for the girls at the school and like for the girl who died by suicide.
Right.
It was like the officer was like, I don't know if we're gonna get anything on, like if we're gonna be able to press charges. And then his dad was like the assailant's dad was like trying to protect him. And I'm just like, this is really fucked up. It's really real.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Really upsetting.
When they had the, I think I wrote down the quote about like tarnish the boy's reputation. Mm-hmm. And I immediately thought to that, I don't want to fucking say the dude's name. The guy who found the unconscious girl in the alley and like fingered her. And then they're like, oh, well, we can't ruin his entire life for 2 minutes of a bad decision. And it's like, he's in college. And like you see that all of the time. And everything about the point system, the dudes in this movie, the straight male macho, all of that is super fucking triggering and wouldn't fly at all in 2021.
Right. Well, I mean... Yeah. We just had a Supreme Court justice elect or like appointed like that. So maybe it does still fly. I don't know.
That gets into so many intricacies of like a rigged system where a minority opinion is like controlling the majority of a country.
Yeah.
I think I'm thinking about like the majority of people's essences and souls and their morality of what like
that it wouldn't fly because people are like, oh no, we can't do that anymore.
Like I still think that like guys today are obsessed with getting laid, but I really think that we're not giving enough credit to like young men today who I don't think that they're gonna rate these people on point systems. I totally believe that from dudes in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that is something that. Like, I'm not saying you're not going to get rid of assault, you're not going to get rid of assholes, but I think that there's been a general shifting, and like, we've been hitting hardcore trying to talk about gender equality and like the way that men and women should interact together, and just seeing this whole point system, it really archaic, right? Totally a dumb fucking male.
I don't know, even like when Sarah and I were in high school X many years ago, because it was like, I don't know, almost 10 years ago now.
Oh, God.
It was less than that. Anyway, I don't think I was aware of any sort of point system thing. Were you?
I don't know.
Or like even like rankings, or I feel like this is such a Hollywood thing because most goddamn like teen males in high school are like lucky if they like get one girlfriend who's interested then, let alone like trying to rack up all of these fucking, like this is not gonna fly. Like I don't, in real life, girls are not gonna take that.
Well, yeah.
No.
I guess it would have to be like an insanely large school for the girls not to be taught.
Yeah.
Because these girls are all going to be like talking about what they've done with their friends. And it's, I mean, all of this stuff in high school spreads like wildfire.
But I guess this is a giant school, though. I mean, I graduated with a class of like almost 400 people.
75.
Then, 75 for you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I still feel like in a school, a large school, even if like this school your size, kids would still talk.
Yeah, I mean, you would a hoe and who's an asshole and who's a player and a user.
Yeah. And like social media, all that stuff gets around.
But if somebody's hot enough, somebody doesn't care. Or that's the thing is, you always think you're the one who's different, and that's what they tell you. Like, here's my reputation, but you're so cute, you might make me want to, sure, I'll meet your parents, sleep together, I don't know you on Monday.
Well, and that's the thing is, there may not be a point system, but there are people who do that. There are women and men who do that.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate.
But just not like, I don't know that there would be a herd of teen boys who, I don't know. I just feel like that was very Hollywoodized.
Yeah, I feel like a college boy type of thing back then. But
like a frat house.
Yeah. But high school makes it a little bit.
Because like, I don't believe it.
Yeah, like
they're lucky to touch a boob.
Right, like they have this sexual prowess to be exactly bagging all of these ladies, and they're telling us through the whole movie that these guys are not smooth.
No,
they're not. Like,
they play football.
Yeah, but they don't seem to have any kind of like romantic bones in their bodies. I mean, they're shown being completely
pigs, morons.
So this is on a lighter note, but Kodak camera development.
Yeah, I wrote that down too.
There's some nostalgia.
Loved it. I did too. I wrote photos. I thought this was so cool. Just like the idea of working in a photo store. And I thought it was an awesome nostalgia moment because it really doesn't exist anymore. And it's something that we have got to watch die.
Yeah, like we all have our own cameras in our pockets now. I remember being excited to have like a disposable camera given to me as a party favor one time. Or like anytime I'd go on a field trip, it was, oh, we've got to get the camera. We have to go buy a camera. Right. And then like, we'd get the films developed whenever I used the pictures. Like it was authentic. Yeah.
Instead of everything just being up in a cloud.
Yeah. Tangible.
That's why scrapbooking should come back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then, like, if your pictures were shit, then you just had your memories.
That's right, you had your blurry photo. Exactly. But yeah, the photo that really did. Now, the photo scene did bring about a little weirdness in Rachel deflecting the advances of males by... She calls herself.
And some people are reappropriating the term dyke. They're like trying to, you know, do it justice, or like they identify that way.
Reclaim.
Maybe she is a lesbian was like my big question throughout the rest of the movie up until she got with Jesse. I'm like, because if she is, that's cool too. But like, it also just upsets me when guys can't take no, and you have to give them a reason, and you lie about things like that, and it's like,
and then like the only reason would be is that she doesn't like men.
Yeah, and then even so, they were talking later about conversion points because.
Yeah. That's why he got so many.
Yeah.
Which was like put in the position of like he's trying to buy her. He's like, what, $20, then $30? Then he's like, well, how about I'm gonna take you out on a date? So like that he's such a prize.
He's worth more than $30. That's what he's saying.
These are
the same guys who go and Jesse, who goes and fucks Tracy in the car while his friends drink and wait.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then he steps out and shows underwear to them.
Oh my gosh. I would be so pissed.
She's kissing him, he's like wiping away the kisses. Like, what the fuck?
And she's all like, I don't have a date for the party.
And he just ignores her.
Hint, hint.
And it's like, I don't know, like, I feel, I'm supposed to feel bad for Tracy. But it's like, open your eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's an asshole. She saw his friends, or teammates, or whatever, however they identify their relationship. Like, I don't know. Maybe she didn't care. But yeah, I was like, I can't imagine being home alone and having that happen. And then her foster parents came home and were like, what happened? Like,
what? She's like, how am I supposed to know? Well, because you were here and a brick was through the window. But she was just in the shower, so.
Meanwhile, Sue gradually begins to suspect that Rachel may possess telekinetic powers through their counseling sessions. She tracks down Rachel's institutionalized mother, Barbara, whose schizophrenia has stabilized, and Barbara confesses that Rachel's father was Ralph White, the father of Carrie White. Sue subsequently brings Rachel to the ruins of the former high school that she attended, which Carrie destroyed in a telekinetic rage in 1976 after being humiliated at her senior prom. Sue, a peer of Carrie's, was one of the few survivors of the incident. When Sue discloses that Carrie is Rachel's half-sister, Rachel dismisses her as a liar.
All right, so I want to talk about Sue Snell. And what I wrote down is Sue Snell helping or hurting?
Yeah.
Like,
she's totally instigated all of the shit of this movie.
She did. I don't know. I feel like she didn't ask very nicely, like, what Rachel was going through. She was, like, just very intrusive.
Right. Pushy. She was super pushy.
Yeah. Well, super pushy. Like, she kept questioning no matter what.
Yeah.
Well, and she was like, hey, here's my psychiatric history. I've been committed. I've been in this Arkham place.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, Sue Snell must have been some sort of, like, more than just a guidance counselor. Because she's, like, having these deep sessions with her. And then she's, like, taking her off campus and showing her things. And I'm like, you're a guidance counselor. Like, put her in classes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you do talk about some stuff, but, like, you're not a psychologist or a psychiatrist. And she's sitting there, like, asking her those types of psychology questions.
Right. Well, not even just asking her, like, really, like, pushing her into, like, talking about these things. And if you don't have a degree, you shouldn't be doing that.
Because she knows she's telekinetic.
It's kind of like in The Office when Michael Scott stages an intervention for Meredith. And he pulls a list of questions to see if she's addicted to alcohol off of some random church website on it. I don't know. That's what it reminded me of.
Like she's trying, because what you're saying is, like, trying to help, but just doesn't know what the fuck she's doing.
Yes.
Yeah. And then, like, she goes and, like, she visits the mom because she wants to know. Because she wants to know.
Yeah.
Right.
And she has all of this guilt, which the cop tells her, you're trying to save someone who died a long time ago or something.
Well, then she forces the mom to tell her, basically. She kidnaps, well, spoilers, but she kidnaps her and takes her with her.
Yeah, the mom's like, I'll tell you, but don't let it hurt my daughter. And then cut to, she's pulling her daughter from class to go tell her.
Yep. Yes.
Like, no setup or anything. Like, you're in the middle of class. I'm going to stand over you. Come with me. Here's a building that, by the way, hasn't been renovated or cleared or anything in 23 years.
Right.
That was actually a burned down yarn factory.
I wonder how long the yarn factory was standing there. Why didn't they clear it?
Probably hasn't been standing there for 23 years.
I mean, maybe it was a 23-year yarn factory. Adults in this movie. You've got Sue Snell, who I guess she's trying to help, but also has a personal thing. The cop, who doesn't seem, you know, very willing to help at all.
No.
You have the rich father, the district attorney, I guess, guy who shows up. And I don't know where it happens in the movie. I doubt it's even in this Wikipedia read-through. But my fucking jaw dropped so hard, more than any other fucking movie I think that we've ever watched before, when the goddamn coach forces the boy to pull his pants down.
Yes. Yeah.
To check for a tampon string.
Yeah.
That was fucking awful.
Horrible.
That would not happen. That happened in 2021 and you're gone.
Yeah.
And there are charges.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like 1999. This is like good old boy mentality.
And it's like in a movie.
Yep.
Because it's acceptable. And then not even so like you're talking about fucking like that. And then the whole on top of it is just to make a joke about women.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right.
Like, and then the joke about women, fuck, is about their periods of which they can't control.
Yep, which most of us have.
Like what? Like, there's what?
Yeah.
There's exactly so much what? In that.
Yeah.
Horrible all the way around.
So adults in this movie, just like, okay.
Yeah, and then like, I don't know. I was thinking back to Sue. She was like, "Oh, well, I think you have telekinetic powers. There's a lab I could take you to." Like,
oh my yeah. god, yes.
That seems some college. Yeah.
But maybe like it was. Yeah, it's not like they're gonna dissect you. But
yes,
still,
they are.
What the fuck, lab? What?
Yes, they are.
They probably would. In the section when the guys call her. They say, what's your favorite scary movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did they say that? I missed it.
Yeah, from Scream.
Yeah.
I believe all of this is actually also happening, and they tell you it's Bates County.
Huh.
From Psycho.
Yeah.
And then Jesse is getting scouted by King University, like Stephen King.
Oh my gosh.
That's fun.
Yeah, so they have a few Easter eggs throughout.
And then there's Arkham Asylum.
Arkham yes. Asylum, yeah. I think Arkham Asylum is originally from H.P. Lovecraft.
Yeah.
And then also it, like, made famous in Batman.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because, I mean, males and females both want the sex, you know?
They want the sex, they want the status, like, she just wanted a date to the party that was a football player and that was it.
Well, and it kind of just, it shows, I guess, different levels of women dealing with sex. I mean, Lisa gives her virginity, gets shamed, and then dies. And you have Tracy, who has sex with him, with Jesse, but then she's expecting relationship immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you have the different ways that girls are dealing with sex in high school or in life. And then all of the guys are just doing the sex.
Mm-hmm.
Until you get Jesse and Rachel, which is supposed to be a momentous love. But I don't know where it comes from. I don't know.
Yeah.
More on that later, I guess.
At this point, I one thing that I wrote down was, we talked about this a little bit earlier, but they bring up the statutory rape charges, and the police officer or whoever is there says, statutory rape, that's a stretch.
Yeah, like what does that mean?
That pissed me off.
They weren't going to pursue it because it was like a BS claim or something. Like, I just thought that was ridiculous.
Would it be like because... No, I think the only way that it would work is that they were dating before he turned 18 and then turned 18 or something like that.
No, he was 18.
There's no stretch to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no stretch.
It was very clear cut. Yeah. Like, she was 16, he was 18, and he was a dick, and everybody knew it.
Right.
16, 18, statutory rape, done. Like, if her family... If that's what they wanted to do, they could have evidence collected, and they could prove it. Like, maybe.
Well, I think later that's what they say. Eric is going to be taken in for, or that even after he gets cleared scot free.
Yeah.
There are no consequences.
It
all disappears.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
that's so indicative of our world.
Yeah,
his consequence is death.
That's right. That's and they enrage the audience. It's called the rage.
Right.
So that when it finally occurs, then you'll be all okay with it.
Super satisfied.
Late one night while driving home, Jesse, another player on the football team, is flagged down by Rachel after her dog Walter is hit by a car in the road. Jesse takes a genuine interest in Rachel to the dismay of cheerleader Tracy, who is pursuing him. Meanwhile, having discovered that Rachel implicated them in Lisa's death, Eric and Mark attempt to scare her into silence by harassing her at her home, but Rachel's parents return home and frighten the boys away.
That was terrifying. I was like, I hated watching that scene. I was so stressed out for her. I was just really thankful that her telekinesis like helped out.
Yeah. Well, because you get human beings in a group together and they're monsters.
Yeah.
And you get teenage boys in a group together and they're evil fucking creatures.
He had brass knuckles that he was going to attack her with.
Yeah. Right.
And like, fuck those guys who are like, I'm not letting my boy go down for rape. Like,
No.
They're just as bad.
Later, the district attorney covers up the statutory rape charges against Eric because the players' families have political influence. Mark retaliates against Rachel by setting up a romantic getaway for her and Jesse, which he covertly films unbeknownst to them. Monica, the girlfriend of Mark's friend Brad, then befriends Rachel under false pretenses, inviting her to a party after a football game. Rachel leaves with Monica to go to the party while Jesse is forced to ride with Tracy after his car's tires are slashed. Tracy stops at her house first and unsuccessfully attempts to seduce him. Meanwhile, Sue manages to sneak Barbara out of the institution so that she can confess Rachel's father's identity to Rachel.
My favorite quote of this section, well, actually, I have two. One of them came from Mark when he fake apologizes to Jesse. And I just want to put it out there that if you ever want to be really, really, really sorry for anything.
Oh, my God.
If you ever want someone to take you back or forgive you, because you need to have them visualize just how wrong you are, you just utter the words to them, I'm smegma.
Yes. Yeah. I'm scum. That's... I'm worse than scum. I'm smegma.
Smegma.
Jeez.
Like, what?
Ew.
Like, what? But okay. So
I mean, he's right.
Yeah, he is right.
I love when Monica calls Tracy a Melrose Place super bitch. Because I know what Melrose Place is.
I'm sorry, what if we stopped calling people pieces of shit and we started calling them chunks of smegma?
chunks of smegma.
Yeah.
I'm gagged.
Yeah, I'm not.
I'm gagged.
I'm sorry.
You smegma chunk.
Ew, stop.
Ew.
Oh my god. I have so many wrong pictures and images.
Yes.
And, can you smell it?
Oh my god, why?
Oh, fuck. Yeah, we can definitely, if we ever want to refer to someone in a horrible way, we can definitely call them a smegma face. Something along those lines. All right, so then, yeah, we talked about the shitty adults. So they get free, very reminiscent of what happened in our society before Me Too movement, like stomping it out. And then we get Monica, who have placed some espionage so that she can fool Rachel. And they have the whole little nice makeup scene where she kleptos the lipstick.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh.
They're going through with all of this and they're setting it up so nicely. And like, everyone's like actually having a good time. I'm like, why don't you just stop? Stop now. Just be sorry and continue on with life.
Yeah.
There's no reason for you to do this. Because, like, everything seemed to be going so well. And, like, that's the horrible part of it. That's the horrible betrayal.
That's how they were, I mean, just, like, you have the capacity for such evil, well, but you had the capacity for such good, too.
They were being such decent people, but it was in order to be assholes.
Yeah.
Like, you can't feel good about yourself unless you're making someone else feel bad.
Do you love the movie moment where they have to show you that it was Tracy who ruined the car by her holding on to the paint can that she never would have been holding on to?
She never would have held that. Yeah. That was stupid. Obviously, we knew she'd done it. Well, I mean, I guess not everybody would think obviously, but I did.
I
thought, obviously, Tracy did that.
Yeah. And also, this is, like, so, I guess, superficial of me. But, like, she spends so much time on her outfit. When she shows up to the party, she looks bad. Like, she picked the wrong
outfit. She did.
Like, she went to pick the wrong one.
She should have just kept the blue dress.
Exactly.
It was bad.
And then she's like, look at, I can just get undressed in front of you, and you'll want to do me, and then I'll win. Like, that was her plan.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, Of course, you're going to forget about her when you're in front of me. So, but then it just cemented more that Jesse was falling in love. And he had already told Rachel he loved her. He already loved Rachel. So I liked him acting in that scene where he was just like, we're going to be late.
Yeah.
There, you look fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, come on. Thanks for the ride, but like, let's go.
Right.
And so, yeah, this is when Sue Snell goes and breaks the mom out. She puts the gum on the lock and everything.
Yeah.
I did find it a tad unbelievable when she was like, hey, I'm currently opening up this door. Could you get my purse right now? Hurry, go sneak.
Right, yeah.
Like, oh my God. Like,
that worked out really well in your favor.
And then immediately the other patient slams her body against it. And then immediately an orderly is pulling that patient away. But nobody saw the mom leave.
Right.
Distraction.
I'm just like, they're like, come on, we got to get to the end of this movie. Like, we got to have this happen. We've been building it.
At the party, Mark and Chuck soon confront Rachel, revealing their sex game and falsely claiming that Rachel was added to Jesse's list of girls that he has vetted. They also project the footage of her and Jesse having sex for all of the partygoers to see. This triggers Rachel's telekinesis, and she seals the house closed. She kills most of the partygoers by causing a large plate glass window to explode, slashing them to death, and also triggers a fire. Meanwhile, Sue and Barbara track Rachel to the party, but a fire poker flies through the front door, killing Sue and another partygoer. As Rachel pursues Monica, Eric, and Mark through the house, they arm themselves with weapons. Rachel kills Monica by causing her glasses to implode into her eyes and causing her to inadvertently castrate Eric with a harpoon. Mark shoots Rachel with a flare gun and she falls into the swimming pool. When Mark goes over to inspect whether she is dead, Rachel appears out of the water and pulls Mark into the pool. Rachel triggers the sensor to the automatic pool cover and manages to free herself while Mark drowns.
Oh my God, he gets his junk torn off.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. I didn't remember that.
So it took them 3 takes to get the glass breaking right, and they used real glass, not sugar glass. They used real glass, and so the actress who plays Rachel had like cuts everywhere, and they didn't show her back for the rest of the movie because she had a lot of injuries.
Shit.
It was an awesome looking scene.
Yeah
it was.
Like when they got into all of the effects of her doing everything, it was really cool.
It looked really cool. Yeah.
And then the first thing she does is blow up that glass, and then decapitates people.
Uh-huh.
And so the guy who videotaped everything, he gets decapitated immediately. So the guy who's having sex, the guy who was filming everybody else, he gets decapitated. Gone.
Yep.
Good riddance.
And what'd you think about the poker?
Oh my God. Okay, so that would have to go really, 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 really fast to get through skull door skull.
Yeah.
She had some power. But I mean, did you think Sue Snell deserved that?
No. Mm, I mean... It's kind of her own doing, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know that she deserved it, but I wasn't, like, sad. I mean, I was kind of like, okay. But I mean, I don't know. It was just kind of like, meh, maybe.
I was shocked.
Yeah, I was shocked.
I did not think that's what was going to happen to her. I thought that there would have been maybe some other accident when when Rachel and her mom got reunited. Like, I wasn't sure what would happen.
But, like, you thought that she would die, end up dead in some way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember being upset when I saw it happen the first time, and then this time I was like, oh, man. But, dude who got the poker, so that was Brad, so that was Monica's boyfriend. And so he got pokered through the head, I believe, and then that went through and got Sue Snell. So then it gets down to Mark and Monica and Eric. And Ashley, how'd you feel, when Monica's eyes exploded? Because, like, the point I'm getting to is, like, wasn't it a weird feeling that, like, you immediately had, like, one of your worst, like, phobia, fear, cringe moments, and then immediately right afterwards, the most liberating thing you could want ever?
I missed it. I missed the harpooning of the balls because I closed my eyes and tucked my chin to my chest and covered my face and I screamed.
Did you rewind?
No. Fuck no.
Did you see it fly in the pool?
No.
Oh my gosh, Ashley.
I need to just see that clip.
I cannot believe how well done it was.
I need to watch it with a chaperone so you guys can tell me whenever the eye stuff is done.
The harpoon goes through him and, like, his junk gets attached to the harpoon and flies into the pool.
Fuck, it gets ripped
off of his body.
Yeah. But all you see is, like, it goes into him and then you see the in the pool.
Like the shadow of junk.
Yeah, the harpoon is in the pool.
That's awesome.
Oh,
that's
my so God. Awesome.
If anyone should have watched it, it should have been you, Ashley.
But of course you missed it because of the eyes. That's fucking horrendous.
Yeah. That was bad.
But clever too. I mean, Rachel's like, oh, you gonna draw on me? Fuck. And she's like, awesome, but it was awful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think that she would have died though.
I mean, if we assume that the glass went into her brain. I mean, she was exploding the glass inwards.
Okay.
Yeah.
She or like her like seizuring
okay,
later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And then I mean, Eric, so he gets that pretty fitting death for statutory rape. And then Mark gets drowned.
And that was like a very gratuitously long drowning scene.
It showed yeah. They made sure to, and they made clever use of the house that they were in, of all of the things that they could do. Mm-hmm. Monica's friend Deborah gets killed by CD.
Mm. Yeah.
How 1999 of them.
That was pretty funny to me, I thought.
Yeah, I don't know. So yeah, so she's pretty much wrecked everybody by this point, because because Jesse and Tracy aren't at the party yet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, does Sue Snell brought the mom
right
to the party?
Oh my gosh, that when mom and Rachel reunite, that was really really sad.
I know,
it was like just ripping that old wound open again, like, at the worst possible moment.
Now let's take a break and hear about our sponsor. And now back to the show. Barbara confronts an injured Rachel and initially attempts to comfort her, but proceeds to accuse her of being possessed and flees. Jesse and Tracy arrive moments later, and Rachel kills Tracy by causing a piece of ceiling to collapse on her. On a balcony, Rachel confronts Jesse about his supposed list, but he denies it. Rachel then notices that the videotape of her and Jesse still playing in the living room has captured Jesse saying, "I love you," while she slept, and Rachel immediately realizes that Jesse's feelings for her are indeed genuine. Moments later, an awning collapses onto Rachel, and with Jesse unable to free her, she uses her telekinesis to throw him over the balcony and onto the pool cover as she burns to death. 1 year later, Jesse, now studying at King's University, shares a dormitory with Rachel's dog, Walter. He has a vision of Rachel appearing in his room, and they kiss before she shatters into pieces. He awakens with a start, realizing that the vision was only a nightmare.
So, Ashley, you're talking about the mom.
Uh-huh.
Mom just leaves. She, like, yeah. literally tells her daughter, like, what are you? And then leaves.
And she's, like, now escaped from a mental institution.
Yeah.
And she yeah. sees people. She's schizophrenic. Like,
like, I'm not saying I wanted her to kill her mom, but I'm just, like... Like, how weird.
It's horrible.
But,
yeah.
like, also probably how realistic it is mm-hmm. to just, like, have someone you wanted to be there for you so badly, then just not.
Right.
Like, this parental yeah. role.
And, but, like, I don't know. She would probably end up doing something later that would get her back into the hospital. But
yeah,
like,
I don't see her surviving on her own.
No, she can't take care of herself.
She was seeing ghost neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Tracy shows up in her horrible outfit and gets burned to death.
That so outfit was awful. Burning my eyes.
It was an awful outfit. I don't know that it deserved a burning death. She didn't get to get burned. She got burnt like squashed.
Yeah.
Like she was like, nope, don't save her. She's dead.
Yeah.
Out of here. I'm watching it this time, and honestly, I'm thinking, oh, I'm worried that we can talk about, like, how in the fuck did she tattoo herself? How did her tattoo ink spread?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of wondered like, where yeah. they got that from.
Why'd they do that?
I don't know.
Yeah, I really don't know.
It reminded me of a certain show called Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh my gosh.
When they wanted to make sure you knew a character was evil, they like veined the character.
Mm-hmm.
Like put veins on the character's face and stuff to be like, see how they've transferred all the way to their evil side? So like maybe they wanted some way for you to show that there was no going back. But like, why was her first thing to... That's not even possible. You can't even spread your tattoo.
No.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, you can't even say that there was enough ink to do that either, like, within the tattoo.
In my movie about my supernatural powers, I would like some realism, please.
Right. Well, I mean, like, even if you had telekinesis, you can't just magically make more ink spread all over your body.
In the form of vines?
Yeah.
Like, with thorns?
With a beating
heart. She's a telepathic...
I mean, you'd have to be, like, way super talented.
She's a telekinetic artist.
Yeah, she'd have to, like, have a tattoo gun and, like...
Yeah.
It was inside of her all along.
It was. She could do so much. Did you guys like how Jesse was letting his arm get burnt? He was staying with her?
Yeah. He's yeah. gonna die with her.
Like, what the fuck, dude?
Yeah, just
what,
get up
what
and
the
go,
fuck,
buddy.
Dude?
You're a teenager, man.
You're on fire.
Yeah.
And like, I get that the impact of the whatever would have killed her, of the roof falling on her, but she probably had enough power to lift it off of her. They right. could have dragged her out.
Yeah.
She dies in his arms or whatever.
Yeah.
That's what I was expecting, kind of.
But then instead, like, she just lays there and waits.
Yeah. Just waits to be burned to death.
Can you imagine, like, living with the knowledge of what you just did?
Yeah, she can't. She wants to die anyway. Because even, like, I this is so in-depth, I guess, and ready to be picked apart. But I guess there are instances where somebody can be victimized so much to the point of becoming a perpetrator of their own.
Yep.
I mean, oh, yeah.
She definitely tipped the scale of feeling sorry for her, being empathetic, to she became villain, you know?
And she believed she was alone. And, yeah, she had gotten her revenge and she was done.
I really think they did a good job of showing the PTSD of Jesse. I mean, the end of the movie was bleak as fuck.
Yes.
It was super fucking bleak.
He's just, like, sitting there, zoned out, like, with the
looking
mirror background.
Terrible, yeah.
Yeah.
Because how do you go on from that? All of his friends dead. The girl he loved dead and did it. I mean, this was, I mean, for him, I can understand the whole Columbine talk because this is a massacre.
Yeah.
And he's a survivor mm-hmm. of that.
And he has like his burn scars on his arm to remember that by like every day.
Yes.
Right.
I mean, just like Sue Snell was a survivor, but in like 1976, Carrie, this was a horrible thing, but like it really became known, the trauma of it, like when Columbine hit, when we started to actually talk more about teenagers and feelings and all of these kinds of things. And it wasn't just violence for violence, that what Jesse went through was going to follow him for the rest of his life. Like anyone who survived any kind of anything, whether it's a concert shooting, whether it's, being overseas in service and you survived, bombs going off somewhere. That I can't even imagine that.
No.
So the movie was ending and I was like, well, teeny bopper horror film, huh?
Right.
It was like,
if you went through that, you would be fucked up.
Yeah.
Definitely.
It was scary for real reasons and not because she had telekinetic powers.
That was just like a icing on the cake.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, do it in that way.
I feel like the powers actually took a back seat in the movie mm-hmm. for a long time. I mean, you only really got the power, like they were only showcased at the end.
You're really right. Mm-hmm. Like it was very much a character driven, a social issue film for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
Like it dealt with being a foster kid. It dealt with being an outcast. It dealt with sex. It dealt with the issues of male dominance. It dealt with PTSD. Heck, we're talking about Jesse, but I was kind of hard on Sue. We're asking if she's helping or hurting. Sue's going through PTSD her whole entire fucking life.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So, like, I guess we can't be too hard on her. This little fucking film dealt with a bunch of shit.
A lot of stuff, yeah.
Have we talked about the plot? We did, didn't we?
Yeah, we're done.
We're at Snowflakes.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
Okay. Suicide, it's got to be an automatic 2, right?
Just for the suicide, yes. I mean...
And then the dog scene made it a 3 for me, I think, because that really hurt me.
I gave it a 3. I started talking on some social media to people about it. And
well, it made me shed tears, so.
Okay.
But, oh my God, yeah.
I think I probably could get behind a 3 just because of the outcast, the revenge murdering, issues,
the filming,
the suicide added on to that. Yeah, I mean, we're at a 3 out of 5. How many triggers are possible? I think a 3 snowflake would be okay.
Yeah, I came in at a 3 as well for all those same reasons.
Now this is a weird, because it's The Rage, Carrie 2,
mm-hmm.
and it's not like the kind of film where you're talking about it and like you want someone to take it seriously, so you're like, hey, it's The Rage, Carrie 2. So this is a weird one, because you're like, would you recommend it? But like, do you think someone would watch it if you told them to, if you recommend it?
You mean by name?
By name. You're like, hey, there's this movie called The Rage, Carrie 2. Like, no one's going to get past that, right?
No.
No.
Probably not.
Like, and that's...
And like, the first minute and a half, 2 minutes of the movie, you're going to like turn it off.
I feel like it's so unfortunate, because I feel like this is an underrated film. I really, really do.
I agree too.
I'm going to recommend it. I recommend The Rage, Carrie 2. If you can get past me telling you what it's called, you can watch the movie.
And I surprisingly would agree with that. Like, I usually would not recommend a movie with like the extreme triggers that are in this movie, but I like the revenge at the end to kind of like stomp all of it out.
Okay.
And I don't know. I found the movie itself to be entertaining.
Okay.
Same.
I don't think I would recommend this personally, just because I feel like so many people live a lot of the things in this movie. But I would ask, I would describe the revenge that Rachel gets. And if somebody, based on that, wanted to watch the movie, then I would say go ahead.
Yeah. I think that it's very nostalgic for me. I remember it from when I was a kid. It's attached to Carrie, which is a huge name. It had a great idea of being able to get revenge on the people who made you feel like shit, which is very attractive to a teenager. Yeah, so I think it was a great recommendation from listener Nicole.
Definitely.
I mean, there were a lot on the list that we want to get to, but I think that this one popped up, and it was like, and I think that 3 out of 4 recommends is not bad.
Not bad, yeah.
Now, I got to think about connecting it to Buffy.
How did we connect American Pie? Because we've got Shipwreck.
I don't remember how we connected American Pie to Buffy.
Willow.
Oh, yeah. Because, yeah, Allison Hannigan is in it. Oh, you know what? Fucking shit. Zachary Ty Bryan is in season 7, episode Help. He fucking tries to sacrifice a girl in order to be rich.
Yeah, in a cult.
Oh, my God.
He's in a cult in Buffy. There we go. So Eric the asshole who gets castrated is also in an episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Done.
And I'll post that on Facebook at Millennial Movie Mix.
And keep up with us on Instagram at Millennial Movie Mix Podcast.
Don't forget to join us next Monday when we go over Scarface from 1983.
Scarface. Because it is the summer of sex and drugs and rock and roll.
Yeah.
Please come back and listen to Scarface. We can't wait to say hello to our friends. I couldn't even
say hello to our little
All right. Bye, listeners.
Bye.